Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And this is Michael Shook, your host of The Briefly Today. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. With me in the studio this morning is the usual gang of rabble-rousers and raconteurs. Directly across from me is the Flying Cowboy, retired airline pilot, current small plane pilot, and our soundboard master.
Is that the airborne cowboy or the flying?
Truman Montana, True O'Brien.
Hey. Ooh, I love that moniker, Truman.
I don't know. This is getting a little loose here, folks. Well, tighten us up a little.
Okay,
there.
But you were born in Texas, right?
I was. And raised in Montana.
Well, there you go. Okay.
You don't like nicknames? And too bad.
You know what's really fun? Yeah, come on. What do you think? You're Donald or what? Come on. It's really interesting. Growing up, I never had a nickname. Never. Mm-hmm. I mean, all my buddies, had nicknames, but
really?
I never did. And,
I'll be,
and I heard a bunch of the guys talking one day, and they said, yeah, well, Truman was the adult. I wasn't sure if I liked that or not.
That's pretty harsh, it's got
connotations.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Anyway, so
that was back when you weren't supposed to trust anyone over 30.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
That's right.
Well, to the left of Truman is just an empty space. Even Bruce Hallman's chair has gone to New Zealand and or Australia, and it still will not testify.
I think we're renting it out, aren't we, for revenue?
We're making money off that.
I think it's a good thing. We should have it for a spectator seat, maybe, for future shows.
Oh, that's a good idea. Well, clear that with Bruce.
I guess, and
the chair. I don't know. So we will keep moving left again.
And left as far as you can get.
To our own Dixie Darling, poet, music maker, and once removed, then put back Pacific native, Lynn Kerrigan.
I love that, Dixie Darling. Well, sounds like a drinking cup.
Boy, no, okay, no, I don't know about these nicknames.
That has connotations, too.
To the port side of Lynn, that is left, again, for landlubbers, is our gadfly, political activist, and sailor, Indivisible Vachon's own Kevin Jones.
Good morning.
Howdy, Kevin.
Howdy.
The cheers of the crowd. And to Kevin's left, we have the Windy City's loss and our gain, thespian and former KVSH head honcho, the current host of Real Talk, Susan McCabe.
Wow. Thanks. Yeah. Welcome and good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Who promises to be somewhat objective occasionally on this show.
I have to be objective in the rest of my life, so on this particular show, I'm going to be extremely opinionated.
There you go. As I said in the email exchange there, let it fly. We were disclaimed.
That's right.
Unclaimed.
It is.
And you.
Oh,
and then
I'm
Mr. Shook.
Me.
Michael Shook.
There you go.
At the gate.
And yeah, the host here. There
Chauncey
you are.
Chauncey the gardener.
There you go. Boy, I'm creeping up on 500 plants that I've trees and plants that I've planted on our property now, about 275 from the land trust. That is such a great deal.
That's a lot of digging.
It is, and it's so good. I get a lot of thinking done while I dig.
Speaking of which, have you seen there's a new program for planting trees where they do it from the air with it from an airplane?
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah,
what, they're on spikes and just drop straight into the ground?
Are.
Gosh,
they
be
are.
Not underneath those. Yeah. Really, be careful how they aim.
Truly, I just saw a thing about it the other day. They
That's
come in,
wild.
They make a low pass, and they have these, they're biodegradable, obviously,
sure.
These spikes are, but they have the tree in the, and it's aerodynamic. I mean, when they drop the thing, it goes spike first and chunk, and they can plant like 20,000 trees in like one pass.
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Okay, it's my summer in Idaho
planting
trees.
If you're not underneath the delivery.
What happens if you're a deer?
You're going to be growing a tree.
My summer in Idaho planting trees when I was 21, I planted, I figured it out, almost 250,000
wow.
trees.
Personally?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
Can I just mention one thing that we learned about each other at Brian's memorial service, which explains a lot about this Brown Briefly show, which is that we are all Irish.
No.
Yes. And so we are all a little bit full of the blarney.
A little.
So
wait a minute.
There you go.
Wait a minute. I don't know. Coming on the heels of my...
Of your assertion that you planted 250,000 trees by yourself.
Okay, if I could find my planning
partner,
just
means
Lorna Corson, she would verify that for me.
All right, so you wanted some numbers? I hauled 750,000 pounds of fish off of one beach one summer.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
And
a big airplane, of course, but
yeah.
Well, 22,000 pounds at a time, but still, that's a lot.
That's
what are you talking about?
I was flying a DC-4 landing on the beach up in Alaska, hauling salmon that was caught there, and we hauled 750,000 pounds off that beach in the summer.
Holy cow!
You can fly with that much weight in
your 23,000. No, it was a big airplane. It was a four-engine airplane. It was a big thing. But 23,500 pounds at a time.
20 trips?
Yeah, it was a lot.
Something like that.
And you were landing that on the beach?
On the beach, yep. Open ocean beach. You had a tide table.
Wow.
There were no runway, no nothing, just the beach.
It was
crazy.
If you need somebody on your side there in a pinch, that's what you want. Well, competent pilot.
But let me just tell you one thing. We had one rule. I mean, we were a pretty wild bunch, I have to admit. But we had this rule. There are only three things we wouldn't carry. That was drugs, guns, and Bibles. Those are the only things that could get you in trouble.
There is an association there.
That could be a deadly combination in any number of ways. Well,
you know, but true, they do say about Alaska Airlines and flying into those cities and airports in Alaska, not to mention the beaches, right, that you get a fair amount of experience.
That
right?
wasn't Alaska Airlines, though.
No, of course, DC-4.
I hope we can count on you for evacuation to Canada when we need to do that.
Well, I'm going to plant you guys like trees, like I was talking about. Just drop you off.
I don't know. I was thinking of the 23,000 pounds, and how many people is that? You know, that's like 10,000 or something. You could move us in mass. You could move the entirety of Vashon.
Probably.
In one haul. Okay.
No, not really. It's too big.
Cramming us in there like sardines.
Secede and become part of Canada myself. But
I had that thought the other day. I thought, what if the whole West Coast, you know, Washington, Oregon, and California just said, all right, we're done. We're going to make our own country
Cascadia.
Here.
That's what I thought when those divers were rescuing the people trapped in the cave in Thailand, remember? Yeah. I thought, can't we get those guys to go underneath Vashon, saw us off where we connect to the earth, and let us drift north?
I tell you what, if the big one comes, we may be doing that. Right.
I think actually, yeah, we are drifting. We're out here on
propelled.
The edge of the continental plate. Well, it is Tuesday, February 4th, in the year of the tweeting twit. Before we dive into the political and social topics that regularly comprise our fair, I think we ought to congratulate our briefly emeritus, Gail Kellner, on the success of her Kickstarter campaign. She wrote a book. The campaign ended Friday, January 31st, and made her goal, which was pretty fabulous, and she can now go forward with getting the thing published. I was not able to get a whole lot of details from her, but conversations with her, I do remember its title, Hope, A History of the Future, and I believe that the plot involves it's interwoven with history as seen by seven generations out, and it's rooted in actual economic, social, environmental principles that have been proven to work. So it's a work of fiction, but it's rooted in fact. Mm-hmm.
And designed to counter some of the gloom that we all feel. You know, there are ways to move forward.
Exactly.
We will move forward, but we have to have a kind of a common vision or some kind of idea about, you know, how we're going to move forward. And that's what I think she addresses.
Exactly. Yeah. And my conversations with her. Yeah. It's a great thing. Nice job, Gail. There you go. So switching now to something else, I like to start this morning with a pithy quote. And it is
pithy quote.
A pithy quote. Oh, it's so pithy. when a man This is a quote. When a man, unprincipled in private life, desperate in his fortitude, bold in his temper, possessed of considerable talents, despotic in his ordinary demeanor, known to have scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, when such a man is seen to mount the hobby horse of popularity, to join in the cry of danger to liberty, to take every opportunity of embarrassing the general government and bringing it under suspicion, to flatter and fall in with all the nonsense of the zealots of the day, it may justly be suspected that his object is to throw things into confusion that he may ride the storm and direct the whirlwind.
There you go. Whose quote is that?
Does that sound like somebody?
Yes, it does.
Alexander Hamilton, 1792.
Wow.
And who was he talking about? Anyone in particular?
Trump. Somehow, presciently,
yes.
The forethought, the foresight, yes.
Really.
Imagining the future.
So that's something to chew over there.
And in local news, I mean, not local news, national news, the Iowa caucus has now revealed that they were going to come out with the majority winners at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Ah.
Oh, good.
So 5 o'clock Eastern.
That's been a bit of a mess, hasn't it, with the... Yeah.
I was hoping we could announce it, you know, on the show today.
Technology.
Anybody want to predict?
I don't know. Did you see most of the candidates prognostication. Gave victory speeches?
Did they?
Yeah, they all gave victory speeches last night. I loved it. It was really funny. They were, you know, they were laughing kind of when they did, but they gave their actual victory speech. And then at the end, it was on to New Hampshire. You know,
it's kind of concerning that people bought some kind of new software to kind of handle this new ranked voting, where if you don't get enough with your first choice of the 15% or whatever it is required, they have to go back and tally the second preference that they had. So it's a lot more of a moving part type on a new electronic platform for them, concerning, isn't it?
No, I think it's just the reporting. It was just the reporting that was the platform.
The actual
caucus was done just like in the old days, where the people come in and they're all in a room. You go to the place where.
Oh, thank you.
And then if you get more than 15%, then you're done. And those folks who had less than 15% have to distribute, all of those who got more than 15% stay, and then those who got less than that, those people who were supporting them can choose which of the others they want to go to.
15%ers.
Exactly. And that's the second round.
Which is the ranked choice, which means which means that none of those votes get thrown away.
Correct.
Which is one of the issues that some people have with our current voting system. Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So then.
But complex and untried, really, in a big stage.
Not totally.
Maine untried. Has it today.
I think the apps.
Yeah.
It's the apps were reporting that failed.
The software was a problem there. Is that right? Was
the reporting. The reporting software, not the actual doing it, because that was still mechanical.
Did they test that before?
Well,
that would have been a good idea. How could you test it, you know, if you think about the speed and the numbers? I mean, how in the world would you test that?
Other than tiny little testing.
All you do is you just have all of your precincts report. You know, a fake report.
Or they could just run computer models, as I understand. Yeah. They do that with lots of... That's I don't know, all this modern technology.
I heard that Ivanka Trump had purchased voting machines for an unknown purpose. I don't know if that's...
No.
we need to validate this.
You reported that here on Vashon.
We need to do a
voice of Vashon. Thank you.
Okay, good enough.
I didn't say I was going to be objective today.
That's right. Yeah,
I do try to be truthful, however.
Okay. I do want to comment on the ranked choice voting, because it is now the law in Maine. And for their senatorial, I'm not sure which races. I don't know that it's all of them, but I think certainly their Senate races. And it's intriguing because now when you look at the results from Maine, you'll see the winner who doesn't have a majority. And it's sort of weird. They're still trying to figure it out. I think they report the first round of votes at when they report in. But what happens, as Truman was saying, is that after the the top two, the people who didn't vote for one of the top two, their votes get redistributed. Yeah. And then basically the person who, you know, didn't have a clear majority in the first round ends up with a majority after the second or third or however many rounds you go. And so I was a real head scratcher, right, to look at this thing where this person didn't get a majority, but they're declared the winner. And this is why. So I think it is an intriguing system. It is literally where your vote does not get thrown away. You know, your vote gets counted eventually.
It's
and
still,
now how do we report them?
It's still the winner is still the one who gets the most votes.
Still gets the most votes.
But not the first round.
Not the first round. Exactly right. Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of, I'm not sure if this is correct. Where is Bruce when we need him? But the parliamentary
Bruce,
procedures.
Come in.
Doesn't that, you know, you have to, a parliamentarian can put together different coalitions and and boost themselves up over the top to become whatever prime minister.
Well, that happens in the Democratic or the Republican conventions as well, where people are wheeling and dealing in the background to make alliances and shift those votes to somebody that seems to be having momentum.
Well, I sure like the idea of no vote getting just sort of discounted because, geez, I didn't pick the winner, so it just basically meant nothing. Maybe that would involve more people.
You know, it's intriguing. In one hand, I think what it would mean is we have the option to rank everybody who's on the ballot. And I actually have a copy of the ballot for the president, and there's like 12 people on it. So if we had ranked choice voting, here's the number one, here's my number two, my number three.
Did you see my name on there?
There's a write-in, there's a other column. Yeah, so I think that's how I visualize your name right there.
He would definitely be another.
I have not taken apart my hopes yet. I have not left the race. I'm waiting for my moment.
You still have a chance. But the notion that, you know, you're going to rank 12 people is like mind-bending for some. But, you know, you don't have to. You don't have to. That's the key.
Yeah, so you can do your first three, your top three choices.
Absolutely. So I think it creates opportunity, and I'd be, you know, inclined to see how it works out at a national level. But, you know, these are the conversations that are going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's more democratic. There you go. In the Sunday edition of the Seattle Times, it was reported that the two suspects wanted in connection with the shootout at Third and Pine McDonald's were apprehended in Las Vegas. This is a bit of good news. But we still have a murder, a very tragic death of the previously homeless woman who seemed to be getting on her feet again, and the wounding of 7 bystanders, some of them quite gravely. And we have to come to grips with that somehow. So I have some questions here, but I think this would be a good time to just go to you, Kevin. You had some really good information about Attorney General Ferguson's plans, and there's bills in the state legislature.
There are bills right now, and they need a little boost because this Friday, it turns out, is the day when bills have to get out of their policy committees, which means that this particular bill about high-capacity magazines needs to move forward. But first, I'll mention what Attorney General Ferguson said. He was at he talked to 8, indivisible groups about 10 days ago. And this is one of the things he talked about. And he says that he actually has a very active role in helping to create legislation specifically around the areas that the Attorney General's office deals with, which is like, taxation, equity, rights and things like that. But within that space also is this high-capacity magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that he told is that in the state laws in the Washington right now, if you go to buy a handgun, you'll walk into your local handgun dealer and you'll pick out a handgun and you'll pay them and you'll fill out some paperwork for a background check. And some 10 days later, you actually walk out of the store with a handgun, assuming that you got approved. For high-capacity magazines and assault rifles, assault weapons, ARs and so on, he said, that's not true. You walk in, you put your money down, you walk out with the gun.
Really?
Yes.
No background checks required?
He said, let me see, he said literally that you can walk out that day with the weapon. Now, people are looking at me like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but his point was that there's more regulation around handguns, mm-hmm. which is actually, I think, Michael, you pointed out, that has a higher incidence of suicides and actual deaths.
Right. Right.
But less regulation on high-capacity magazines. And, you know, Truman, he might have said the high-capacity magazine is what you walk out with that day.
I suspect that's
yeah,
what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah. So, and he's concerned about this, right? Mm-hmm. He cited how many, you know, rounds per second can be discharged and how many people per minute can lose their lives in those kind of incidents. So for our listener who is concerned about this, it is House Bill 1068. And the way you comment on that is you go out to the legislative website, which is leg.wa.gov or leg.wa.gov. You click on the bill information label, and you go out and enter 1068 into the data field and do a search, and you can then comment on that bill right online. And if you care about this topic, you'd want to do that, you know, between now and Friday, earlier the better. But anyway, I thought it was fascinating where the Attorney General was talking about the disparity of different types of regulations for different types of firearms and different types of accessories. Mm-hmm. And his view, I think, was that it's probably good for us to understand, do we have an equitable system here, and is there some changes in the laws and regulations that will make it more equitable, and where do we fall on the side of safety? So that was one of the key points, I thought.
Okay, so I do need to point out that the two suspects that were arrested in Las Vegas from the McDonald's shooting had between them 65 total arrests.
Yeah.
65. So I assume that those two would not be eligible to purchase a firearm. So where did they come from?
And
did they get them?
Yeah.
And what kind of firearms did they use?
I don't know. Handguns.
There were three handguns. The police picked up, I think, 20 shell casings from the scene, all of them from different caliber, from three different caliber handguns, which indicates, obviously, that each shooter had his own firearm.
Yep.
But it sounds like, Truman, what you're sort of saying is that the regulation of new sales of guns won't necessarily stop all these shootings because of the fact that people get guns any way they can.
Exactly.
And it's not that that's not true.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to come
back
to.
I'm not saying that.
We've got to start somewhere.
Exactly. And I personally, I'm a firearm owner. I grew up with firearms.
Me too.
Just, you know, yeah. But I've said this many times before, I see no use for an AR-15 in civilian hands. I mean, I just don't. And I don't see any need for high-capacity magazines. I mean, if I'm going to go hunting, if I can't hit something with, you know, six rounds, I better quit.
Right, because these are 100, I understand, in some of these.
Is that what, that's the curiosity for me, is how is it that this particular high-capacity magazine law got there? How is it those laws, those high-capacity magazines are allowed without background checks when handguns are not?
Well, it's part of the accessories.
Hunters?
Though. It's the accessories. You know, they're not part of the...
Oh.
Collectors.
You can buy as many magazines as you want. You can't do anything with them unless you have a rifle or,
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's why they're not regulated.
Well, the mass shootings that have been perpetrated, I looked this up on that Pew Research Center website, AR-15 type rifles, it covers a wide variety, but they're all basically based in, it's the military style assault rifle, were used in only 4%, I think, of the
mass shootings.
Yes. And the other, and mass shootings are defined currently, I believe, as 4 people dead or shot
or
more. Handguns, again, are the overwhelming weapon of choice. It's a really tough problem when we've got, I was reading in the Times here, there's an estimated 250 million to 300 million firearms in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Holy Moses.
Among our populace. Some people don't own any. Some folks own 35 15, or 40.
Yeah. So
makes you nervous about honking on the highway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it does. Yeah.
Truly. Yeah. Go ahead, Truly.
I was just going to say, you know, I said before, I see no need to personally own a, you know, an assault rifle or, mm-hmm. or a high capacity. There's a couple of companies down in Las Vegas or in Nevada anyway, that have, they have a really a great program. You can go in there and to their range and you sign up, you can shoot anything that you want to shoot. I mean, you want to shoot an automatic, you know, they've got machine guns so that you can shoot those. And great. So those folks that want to do that, they can go there, they can rent those, they can shoot them there, and they can go home. They don't need to have
unarmed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't have to go home. I mean, they don't have to have that at home. And the reason evidently, I mean, the reason that you want to do that is because it's fun. It's fun shooting a machine gun. I got to tell you, it is. But you don't have to have one in your house for crying out.
And the other thing that it makes me think of as a former social worker has to do with if there's 65 total arrests by these guys, there's a system failure here sometime, not just in gun safety, but in mental health or substance abuse or probation or rehabilitation mm-hmm. or something. Somebody should have been identifying people with that level of dysfunction and hostile aggression.
Yeah. Well, and this is where I said, okay, so we're passing legislation to limit magazines to 10 rounds or less, or we're trying to. No more AR-15 type rifles, you know, restricting the sales of those kinds of things. But I wrote here, are we barking up the wrong tree? Are we putting Band-Aids on a skinned elbow when it seems to me there is a grievous wound to the heart of our society?
Yeah.
People like Truman and myself grew up with full access to many firearms. We had, I think, 8 different firearms in our house, ranging from pistols to shotguns. Our family didn't even hunt that much. But we used them for shooting at targets or hunting with them. There was little or no problem with that. So I think the deeper question that we're, as a culture, not just in the Northwest, but across the country, is what's going on? What is happening that people are killing themselves, which is the majority of handgun deaths, and shooting each other?
Well, what is our national relationship with firearms, period? I don't know, but I would be curious about how many folks in Scandinavian countries or in European countries actually grew up with firearms in their homes and how they were toys. They were viewed as toys in the upbringing that you guys describe.
No, not at all. So, not in
but what is our relationship with guns? Why?
If you look at Switzerland, you know, they're issued rifles. The individual has to go through military training.
Because they are a militia, aren't they?
Exactly. Right. They are.
And, they don't have an army.
Yeah, but the citizenry, the
citizenry.
Thank you. Is armed.
mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm. And I believe Canada has nearly as many firearms per capita as we do.
I wanted to answer the deeper part of your question. Yeah. Not answer it, but explore it. For me, that's what social work is all about. Mm-hmm. Because in this capitalist, high-pressured system where money is flowing to the top, there is a lot of collateral damage. People mm-hmm. are left behind mm-hmm. without adequate support services mm-hmm. to kind of benefit from our society. It's kind of a merciless economic engine, the way we have configured capitalism. And I think, you know, I've spent my career cleaning up messes that have been made by people left behind who mm-hmm. are frustrated, alienated, isolated, angry, you know, with nowhere to go except their anger. And that was what I meant earlier, where somebody with 65 arrests or people with that amount need to be not just jailed, you know, but addressing ourselves, what is going on with people that are that broken, mm-hmm. you know, and how do we move forward with that? Mm-hmm. It's another parallel question.
Yeah, it's a beautiful point, and it makes me wonder about our healthcare system, and that is also capitalistic and leaves people behind who might need mental health coverage who don't get it because they can't afford it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, or don't seek it, I mean.
Because they're shamed, or yeah. don't seek it because they can't afford it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or their relatives can't incarcerate them or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah, so there's values here, right, that we're talking about, right, and what's important to us and how do we address those values. And the thought that came to me along similar lines was, do our laws really reflect our values around this point? Because we often hear that the majority of gun owners say background checks are a really smart thing. But in some cases, we don't have those kind of laws. We certainly don't at the federal level, is my understanding.
I just looked that up. 93% of Democrats favor background checks for both private sales and gun shows. 82% of Republicans polled favor those same laws. So why do we still have gun show loopholes where I can go to a gun show and buy a couple of pistols?
And yet the special interests are coming in and influencing our legislators. The huge amount of money.
Also a capitalistic endeavor.
That's right. The huge amount of money the NRA pours into supporting candidates, is at issue.
Go ahead, Kevin. I know.
Well, I think that a good point was made by Truman that's sort of not quite heard by everybody. But apparently last year or 2018, I think, was the first year where the gun safety groups outspent the NRA. Mm-hmm. Now, the NRA is sort of going through a little bit of a financial problem right now. So who knows what's going to happen in 2020? I can't predict that, right? But the notion that more people are rising up and speaking, I think, is a good trend from my perspective.
Absolutely.
And hopefully raising awareness of these things.
That's hopeful.
Yeah.
This is this is interesting, and it makes me, I do want to come back kind of to more the social thing. Our country is so vast and so diverse in its communities and its different kinds of values that people have. But I think what humans thrive under, and this is just what I've read, what I've learned over the years, is when we have really strong relationships, our lives work better for us. So when I look back on my life, I had several grandmothers that weren't related to me by blood. I had a whole bunch of mothers and fathers in the community I grew up in who, they rode herd on us. Mm-hmm. They kept an eye on things. And when we started getting too far out of line, we were quickly alerted to that fact and encouraged to get back into line.
It's small town America.
It is. But even my friend Tony, who grew up in Pittsburgh, so that's major city, he was third generation Italian, working in the steel mills and everything else. And their neighborhoods there, we were talking about this one day, and he said, boy, we had the same thing. People in that community, all the Italian Catholics went to their parish. The Irish Catholics next door, and that they went to theirs. The Polish Catholics went, but all those neighborhoods knew who those people were in those neighborhoods and kept an eye on each other. And not in a bad way, but they looked out. So when people were in trouble, there was somebody there to step up and say, hey, what's going on? Do you need a hand with some things? What's with you today?
Yeah. And now we live in cities, and gangs are often young men's families.
And we read that over and over.
I know.
Yeah.
And so I think that you're right that, people being raised by television, social media, and, their peer group once they hit teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have not really come to grips with that.
Yeah.
I think that what that change might have done is to make young people feel like they are not valued. When somebody's watching out for you, whether it's to make sure you're walking the straight and narrow or to make sure that you're loved and valued, you value yourself enough that you're not going to go out there and do something ridiculous like shoot a bunch of people. But when you are abandoned by any sense of family or you're living on the love of social media, you don't feel valued. And therefore, you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah. One of my favorite psychologists, that's a great point, Susan, because one of my favorite psychologists, I remember in a lecture he was giving,
said that one of the worst things, the worst thing, he said, that can happen to a child is that that child is ignored.
Yes.
Because what it says to the child is, I don't matter.
That's
no
right.
one cares enough about me
right.
to even pay attention to
That's
what
right.
I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And no wonder, you know, then they're off to look for somebody who will pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they can get some status mm-hmm. in their world, mm-hmm. you know, get mm-hmm. some bragging rights or whatever, sure. you know, gives them some
so that they're seen by somebody.
Worth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit thing. A little bit off topic, but not totally. Have any of you seen Jojo Rabbit? The movie
not
Jojo
yet.
Rabbit.
No,
I
to, but I want
gone
to. It's coming.
It's
here. Coming to.
It's here.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yeah.
Good.
And I can tell you that it applies. It may have been already here and gone. But some of the things that we're talking about applies. It is not, by the way, it is not a comedy. If you think it's a comedy, it ain't. There's some comedic parts.
Moments.
Very comedic moments, but it is not a comedy. But it kind of addresses what we're talking about. It's talking about the Nazis and mm-hmm. how all of that worked and the brown shirts, you know, the kids and mm-hmm. their indoctrination. Mm.
Can I use this as a time to kind of segue briefly into kind of the idea of how we develop our civics consciousness
sure, sure.
and activity? Because I read in the New Yorker this week, so it's the February 3rd, 2020 edition, there's an article in there by Jill Lepore under the Future of Democracy section called In Every Dark Hour. And I think it's one of the best articles that I've read in a long time because it talked about this is not the only time democracy has been under peril. And during that 30s, those 1930s, there was so much disagreement about how to develop this country in response to the emerging problems in Europe that things were really dark. In America then. I didn't know that, and I won't bore you with a lot of examples, but it talked a lot about, so who responded to that? How was that countered? Mm-hmm. And it said that, and this is what I love, actually we are a part of the most successful opposition to that kind of choice of a kind of an uncaring capitalism versus a merciless sort of state-run economy, that the middle ground is town meetings mm-hmm. and a lot of debate about these values. And they started hosting, thanks to FDR, not just his fireside kind of chats, which came a little bit later, but during that 30s, she talks about there were innumerable town halls held all over America. And the goal, again, was not to convince people of anything, but to start talking about what was going on, all the complexities and all of the thoughts that it said that the people who responded were librarians, teachers, journalists, you know, the average people who mm-hmm. spent their time thinking about things, maybe for a living, but led these town meetings. And apparently they happened everywhere and really kind of became a kind of a stewpot for us, not just having chaotic reactions mm-hmm, to things, mm-hmm, but a better understanding of what was happening and a better way, talk about relationships, to ride out such a stormy time, mm-hmm. that it's better for us to be together
yes,
talking about this.
That's great.
It was interesting watching. I watched a little bit of the Iowa caucuses. I hate to bring up another sore spot, but it was interesting. They were going around interviewing people, and the folks were talking, you know, about, hey, well, this is, you know, this is what we think about this, and exchanging ideas. I thought, wow, mm-hmm. you know, what a wonderful process.
And I think
is,
there's something very, very powerful about when people come together in a community, and that can be anything from a small little neighborhood to a much larger neighborhood of some kind. But when folks come together, and all of a sudden you're seeing faces and you're putting faces together with voices and you're seeing, you know, oh gosh, you know, I've run into that person or I've seen that person in the store or at the PTA or something. And now it's humanized. Now it's like, exactly. Yeah, we're all in this together, aren't we?
Exactly. And it's hard to be really hostily aggressive and just go shoot people that you know. It is true that in domestic violence, I want to say there's a difference with domestic violence, because that is almost exclusively from people that know each other,
sure,
that are related, right, but broken. And I just really like the idea that apparently the feds funded this. This is partially where the Fairness Doctrine came in. These all were linked with FDR and the New Deal. And I just want to read something, because W.E. Du Bois said, it seems to me the only method by which we are going to achieve democracy in the United States is participating in these kinds of discussions.
Participating, period.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
Intriguing to me that, Lynn, you mentioned the type of people that were attracted to this were teachers and librarians.
And union organizers,
okay,
right.
Okay, well, and the fact that, you know, those folks are all connected to systems that allow us to have sort of persist in a thought pattern and a value system, right?
Exactly.
And religion is such a system. Education is such a system. So what are those enduring things?
And the arts.
That we keep coming back to. Yes, and some are organized and some maybe less so, but the notion that teachers certainly,
right,
an organized force in sort of a way of thinking about things and a way of putting ourselves into perspective relative to these events that happen around us.
So can I put in a plug? Captain Joe just came in, who shows later on at noon today. Captain Joe, are you going to have Vogel on today? So there's a gentleman who was one of the community council organizers way back when here on the island, is back and is trying to reestablish that. And I think this is getting back to what we're just
That's
talking
great.
About
we
right
did.
Now.
We had a community council, and David Vogel was president for many, many
how
years.
How timely. How, yeah.
And he's
great.
Back. He left the island, and he's back now, realizing that here we are struggling with a lot of things without a community forum. Mm-hmm. I want to tell a quick Dave Vogel story. When I first moved to the island, I got lost trying to park in the north lot and ended up somewhere up in the residential area. And a car was following me. And I thought, this is weird. But finally, I got so lost, I stopped. The person got out. And I thought, well, I'm either going to have my throat slit or somebody's going to help me. And it was David Vogel. And he leaned in and he said, I had never seen you or your car before, and you were headed up in the wrong direction, so I thought you might be new, and I thought I would help you get out of here.
What a great guy.
Now that's a community.
Yeah,
there you go.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's
Thank you, David.
Yeah. I've got a programming note as well that might be important for our listener, because today is the State of the Union Address, right, today, which starts at 6 o'clock. So there are alternatives, which I thought I would do a little research before coming on the show. Right here on Voice of Vashon, Voice of Vashon TV, there's chamber music. And starts at 6. And the Voice of Vashon Radio, we got the Vashon Island Sports Machine. So that'll have an alternative. There's some others on the NFL channel. You can watch Super Bowl commercials. So I think that's good.
Cool.
That'd be kind of fun, just the commercials.
Studio TV has Get Shorty, which I thought might be sort of relevant. And if you don't lean that direction, the sci-fi channel has Mad Max, which maybe is the thing we're trying to avoid in the first place. But anyway, that's the alternative to the destruction.
That's
that
what
might,
happens without little, community values, people.
Dystopian future there that we're looking at.
So. Well, what we're talking about is expanding this one thing about the State of the Union to states of the Union, from a lot of us talking about how we all are.
Yeah.
Not one person telling us how we are.
E pluribus unum.
Exactly.
That's wonderful. Out of many, we can form one larger community, but we got to have all those many. Got to have that.
That's right.
That diversity.
Well, folks, in honor of Brian, here's our closing music. So, see you all next week.
Adios.
Thank you.